Mother's Day, just around the corner. Call Kuhn Flowers and send mom a beautiful floral arrangement. She'll love it and she'll love you. This is Dan Hicken, and Kuhn Flowers wants to be your florist.
And now, Rick Ballew takes you into the night on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, off we go. A Wednesday night into the night. I am Rick Ballew. Lots to do on this Wednesday. We'll keep you updated on all of the activity going off playoff-wise in both the NBA and the NHL. That's what you get this time of year. Playing to move on, both the ice and the hardwood. Boy, the Kyrie Irving stuff is really nasty. He's already, right now, put himself in Boston as perhaps one of the greatest villains of all time. And he still wears Celtic green. They're just waiting. They're almost begging for him to move next door to New York, where they can boo and they can hiss. And it's very interesting. The Kyrie Irving story is a very intriguing one. I think you can look at it and say it's totally backfired on him. Then again, what's the most important thing to Kyrie Irving? Is it the fat wallet? If so, he's going to get off here. He's going to make a ton of money. He's going to make the NBA max. But we all remember the divorce and the situation with him and the King and how they couldn't coexist in Cleveland. And, you know, he went to Boston, a team that has played above where they are supposed to as of late. And they thought when they went out and got a guy like Gordon Hayward, who's been just an absolute disaster. I mean, it's the worst contract in the NBA. And then you had a guy like Irving that maybe he's enough to push them over the top. Is Kyrie Irving a top five player in the NBA? Is he a top 10 player in the NBA? Well, it's certainly not the former. If there's one thing that we've learned about Kyrie Irving, he's not a clear-cut dominant number one. And that's not necessarily picking on Irving, because there's really not a lot of those players right now in the association. And that's disappointing, because this game has become, over the years, it has really evolved into such an incredible individual sport, really to the point where I think it's lost some fans. I mean, globally, the NBA is huge, and it's got more than its niche. I mean, it's big. The playoffs are all over the place. I get up and I watch assorted shows on ESPN. They won't touch hockey. They won't even go near it. They'll bring on Barry Melrose for a cup of coffee, and he'll give you the standards. And that's it. If you want hockey now, you have to go to the NHL Network. That's the only place you're going to get it. You go to the national hosts, you go to the national television shows, they are going to give you the NBA. That is the premier sport right now in the month of May. But it's all about individualism. It's all about, really, complaints. I mean, does anyone or anything compare to the complaints that we get in the NBA? It's just brutal. Now, there is the diva category that we're all aware of in the National Football League. And that comes with assorted skill position guys, high maintenance guys, guys who put themselves in front of their team. Some will say that you've got one here in Jacksonville, in Jalen Ramsey. For me, they're typically wide receivers, and there's a bunch of them, and they dominate the news. But when you get down to it, the NFL's still a great team game. And the NFL is still dominated by an outstanding quarterback, a well-coached team, and certainly timely defense. Look what happened this past year in the Super Bowl. It's amazing how things changed in a year. Where Big Nick Foles, 41-33 2 years ago, the shootout, the mastery of Doug Peterson, going for it on fourth down, some trickeration. And Philadelphia outguns New England. This year, the exact opposite. We got an old school 4.3 yards in a cloud of dust. We're going to run it right at you. We're going to tell you we're going to run it right at you. Can you stop us? Oh, yeah, and the other side going to play some defense. I mean, what was it, a 13-3 final? You know, it's still the ultimate team game. The NBA is nothing except for individual players and then massive criticism, namely by those star players. Talked about LeBron the other night, okay? I love LeBron. I am a LeBron fan. I am a LeBron supporter. But he really whined. He really bitched about the Magic Johnson. Who cares? Magic quit. Magic couldn't work the 80 hours a week that you have to work for the job. LeBron had to make it all about him. Live from the barbershop. Had to. James Harden getting fouled. Go make it all about him. Russell Westbrook in the media. I mean, going after the local columnists there in Oklahoma City. Russell Westbrook not intelligent enough to realize that when you neglect one member of the media, he's still going to go out and write his story. You're really neglecting the fans who adore you because they're not hearing you. And now you bring to the surface Kyrie Irving, who, again, is just getting abused in Boston. Awful human being, terrible teammate, and a bad leader. But in a sport that has so many individual stars, how many right now are actually good enough to be considered an A1 or a 1A? They can grab the team and make them that much better. Kyrie Irving proved that he's not that guy. Kyrie Irving could be a phenomenal player with someone else, like when he had the King in Cleveland. And if he goes to New York and Kevin Durant goes there, you got a chance to turn that lackluster, just absolutely atrocious franchise into maybe something right now. Who does it right now in this game? Kawhi Leonard? Antonio Davis? Is it Lillard? Is it Giannis? Absolutely, it's Giannis. Matter of fact, if we can get Max Kellerman on the program, he'll tell us he's the greatest basketball player in the history of the game. He's headed that way in five seasons, even though he's only averaging 18 points in his career. Max Kellerman will tell you that. Kevin Durant? Yes. Who else? Am I forgetting anyone? The King? Steph Curry. Is Steph Curry a good enough player to do it all by himself? No way. He's a freaking point guard. And I know the year they won, they knocked off Cleveland. All right, Kyrie Irving was injured that year. If he wasn't injured, I think Cleveland wins that series. So I just think it's really intriguing. And again, this guy's getting blistered by that Boston media, but I don't think it's all his fault. What is his fault is that he's a bad human being and he's a bad teammate. It's not his fault that he's not one of the top five players in the NBA and can't lead the franchise. But anyway, that's being discussed tonight. They'll tip in Milwaukee. Game five there. Giannis and the Bucks up 3-1 in that best of five. We got some hockey tonight. Game seven. This is what it's all about. You stay up last night, LeVay? Did you watch it into double overtime?
I got to watch the first overtime, and I was asleep after that. Nothing against the game. I was worn out.
Yeah, the game wouldn't have put you to sleep. The game was absolutely phenomenal. I think the discrepancy in shots last night was virtually 2-1. I think it was 60-30. And the team with the 60 shots finally got one by Bishop in double overtime one night ago. St. Louis advanced to the Western Conference Finals. They will now take on the winner of tonight's matchup between Colorado and San Jose. I will always say this to you. It is free advice from the truth teller. I'm not going to pound the table, but I am just going to tell you. There is nothing better in sports, period, than a playoff hockey game that goes in the sudden death overtime. And if you put a game seven on the line where the winner advances and the loser goes home, the theater is even that much thicker. You get it tonight in San Jose. Colorado, San Jose, puck will drop right when I get off the air at 9. Telling you, peak. If you have DirecTV, I think it's 220 All right, peak tonight. Yeah, I'm not asking, don't give it your undivided 60 minutes. I mean, I understand. People get bored. You can't do that. I mean, I gotcha. I'm with it. I understand how you got to be always moving. Why do you think we go to every stoplight and, you know, the light turns green? Everyone's like, what's going on? What's hold up? Because someone's on their phone. I mean, everyone's freaking bored. All right? You can't watch 60 minutes worth of hockey tonight. I got you. I understand. Well, check it out after a period, maybe two. Follow it on the phone. And if you got a tie game or a one-goal game in that third period, go to it then. Watch it late. See the excitement. See these tremendous athletes. See how the officials, the referees, literally swallow their whistle. I mean, you have to virtually decapitate someone on the ice in order for that whistle to blow and for you to go to the penalty box. Those are the unwritten rules of the National Hockey League, and you're going to get that tonight in San Jose with a Game 7. All right. The 53-man roster was created by our good friend Hayes Carline. We are blessed tonight by his presence. He will join me right now. And I have a couple of things I want to knock around with Hayes. We'll go through the roster. It happens to be an early look. But in this one-horse town, you can never talk enough Jacksonville Jaguars. And that's what we're doing next. From 1 to 53, an early look at the roster. Hayes Carline in with Rick Ballew as we go into the night.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, incredible day. Just a great day in Jacksonville. We move one day closer to mandatory or just minicamp, rookie minicamp, coming up on Friday. Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to watch them work. And you know what? I get it. I mean, you put up a 5-11 season. Maybe, and you'll never hear me say this, except for right now, but maybe being as accessible all the time isn't what this team needs to be. They need to take themselves perhaps a little bit more seriously after incredible expectations a year ago, and obviously a team that had some difficulty dealing with positive press. So this year we won't see that. The mini cam. I'm trying to remember if we did a year ago. I know TPC ran up against it the last several years. And for the most part, we were there doing our live shows at the players. So it's kind of affected at least somewhat. But obviously, with the players being moved to March, it would have been great to get out there and take a look at these guys. But we will get a chance to interview quite a few of them, including I'm going to get a chance to talk with Quincy Williams, the third round linebacker. I'll interview him on Friday, play that for you on Friday night. All right, our buddy Hayes Carline is put together some wonderful work that you can read by going to 1010XL.com. His early projection of the 53-man roster. And he joins us here with Rick Ballew on 92.5 FM. What's up, Hayes?
Rick, it's great to be with you. I'm out here watching Jackson go through a flag football practice. It's a gorgeous night. What a fantastic city to live in.
It is. Now, are they all, north-south, or is it a little east-to-west in their game?
Yeah, it's a lot of spread. So right now he's juking some guys. We're making some progress here, and we're gonna have a couple new ball plays up our sleeve for Saturday's game.
All right, now if a kid is unhappy or a parent is unhappy, do they walk off the field and immediately enter the transfer portal, or do they just quit the game for good?
Yeah, there is a portal, and I'm signing people up, Yeah, this is about as a good a vibe as you can have. It's people just having a good time, and he's just 8 years old, so it's a lot of fun watching him.
Outstanding. All right, first things first. So try to forget about expectations, because a year ago at this time, I ended up picking him going to the Super Bowl. I think you had him going pretty far as well. But forget about expectations. Just the 53-man roster. Is this a better roster right now than it was 1 year ago?
I don't think it is. Now, obviously, if Nick Foles is the significant upgrade that they hope, then you know, then it will be. I think that's important enough to carry the day. But going through it and trying to come up with the 53, I felt like it was harder to do it this year than it has been in years past, because I just don't think that the bottom of third of the roster has that much depth. And, you know, hopefully that won't be a huge factor. Hopefully this team won't have the injuries that they had last year. But I think top to bottom, 1 through 53, this roster is not on par.
Yeah, you know what? And I tend to agree with you, and let's begin, and we'll be able to kind of make our way through that, because, you know, right now I look at this team without a third down back, a serious lack for another wide receiver, and obviously another tight end, maybe if even he's only defined as a blocking tight end. Those are the three that really stick out for me. But, you know, let's begin. The quarterbacks, yeah, you know, I think they will take three. I think it'll be an interesting battle between Cody Kessler and, you know, this Alex, is it Magoo that they're going with? Alex Magoo, I'm not sure how you pronounce his name, but, you know, do you think they'll go with two young guys, or, you know, Cody Kessler is the man who ends up making this roster?
Yeah, I think it'll be Kessler and Gardner Minshew to start it off. And then I think that's going to be, my guess is that Minshew would have to totally outplay Kessler for them to go into the Kansas City game week one with just Kessler, or excuse me, with just Foles and Minshew on the roster. So I think they're going to be, you know, I think wary of that. I think Minshew would have to completely outplay Kessler in camp. So if it's even, I think they will keep three. Part of that's because, again, I don't think that they have the strong depth in some other spots where maybe you would not want to keep three quarterbacks. That would force you to make a cut somewhere else you don't really want to make. I don't see that. So I think, you know, you worry about what if Nick Foles, something happens. I don't think that they would want a sixth-round rookie as the next guy in. So I think Cody Kessler probably makes it as well. But I think he's a guy that once you get to week four, week five, and Minshew's a little bit more up to speed, he could be a guy that gets sliced once they start getting to the second quarter of the season. But I think going into the year, it'll be Foles, Kessler, and Minshew.
All right. Leonard Fournette, Al Blue, Reichwell, Armstead. I agree with the three there. Benny Cunningham, probably just a special teams guy. I don't know how involved he'll be actually with the offense at running back, but you have Thomas Rawls getting cut.
Yeah, I do. I think the Armstead selection in the fifth round is going to be, makes it tough for Thomas Rawls. So, you know, we'll see. I don't know much about, you know, Alfred Blue, other than the fact that Caldwell and Marone have raved about him. So I think he's pretty safe. So I think Armstead's spot is probably going to mean that Rawls, you know, heads to the exit. But, you know, he's been an exciting player when he's healthy. And if he's finally back to full strength, then he could be somebody in training camp that makes a little bit of noise. But for now, whether it's cut or whether they trade him, if he has a good camp, I think Thomas Rawls will not be on the 53.
Hey, Alfred Blue has 69 receptions in 5 years. Who is the third down back for the Jacksonville Jaguars?
Yeah, it's a great question, because it's not there. I, you know, Caldwell believes Cunningham can do some of that, so he may get the opportunity, but that seems like a big ask. I mean, no one else has really asked him to do that much of late. He's been strictly a special teams player. So I think that's interesting. I think that's a position that, you know, maybe they'll, you know, come back to once you get to the waiver part of the preseason. Obviously, there's just the one cut now, but, you know, they'll be seventh in line on all waiver claims, you know, once the cuts are made. So that could be something that you see down the line. But for now, I think it's an issue. I will say, I think Fournette was making strides in that area. You know, is he a guy that, you know, they would feel more comfortable playing on third down, and maybe Alfred Blue plays a little bit more maybe on second?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I think Leonard can catch the ball. I mean, but again, a big part of that is just how, you know, serious is Leonard Fournette taking this. It seems like the early returns are good right now, but, you know, there's still a long way to go before the Chiefs roll in.
Yeah, and that's why I was a little bit surprised in the Armstead draft selection. For Jaguar fans out there listening who are not aware, you read any scouting report, he is a first and second down back. He's not a third down back whatsoever. Hayes Carline with Rick Ballew taking a look at Hayes's projection on the Jaguars' 53-man roster. You can read it as well by going to 1010XL.com. All right, you and I differ here a little bit. I think they're still going to keep a fullback on this team because I think that's the old school in Tom Coughlin. I know Dimitri Flowers is a guy. Tommy Bohannon still out there for the taking. You think they're getting away from the fullback?
I do think they're getting away from it, and they haven't said that. I'm just reading the tea leaves in terms of, you know, Flowers is a player that, you know, really hasn't had the chance to do much in this league. Bohannon, I think, is a guy that they were comfortable with, who they could have easily re-signed and so far haven't. So it does tell me that maybe the John DeFilippo influence in coming in as new offensive coordinator is to sort of move away from having a true fullback. And if they want to use a player in that kind of role here and there, maybe it could be, you know, whoever ends up being the fourth tight end on the roster, who I think might be Ben Koyak.
Yeah, and right now that would be the fourth guy. You have four tight ends here making the roster. You know, what about going out and getting a guy like Lee Smith, who was considered a very good blocking tight end? I know there's not a lot of money, somewhere in the neighborhood of $13.7 million available, and obviously they got to sign this rookie class, and then you have all the Yannick Ngakoue rumors. Is there a chance that they could bring in a blocking-only tight end?
I think there is. They've always done a good job of anytime you think they don't have money to spend, they end up signing a player. So I certainly wouldn't put it past them. I think a big part of it will be Yannick Ngakoue, and do they want to get this deal done this summer? I think they should. You know, but if they're not, if their plan is to let him play it out or certainly play it into the regular season and see, you know, how his fourth year is going, then they do have some money to spend. And I would anticipate that they would spend it. I don't think this is a club that has to worry so much about having a lot of rollover money, because they're going to have so much dead money that evaporates when you look at the Bortles dead money and the Malik Jackson dead money.
Far more questions than answers right now at wide receiver. You listed the five that are on top of the depth chart, and no argument here. I'm just concerned about another addition. Is there a rookie who will surprise us beginning on Friday? Is there a chance that, again, they check the waiver wire here and they bring in a veteran down the road? I mean, the way I look at it, I'd love this roster to add a third down back, a blocking tight end, and somehow, Hayes, find another wide receiver.
Yeah, the receiver position is really interesting in the fact that they didn't address it. And I think when you look at it, and I understand, they signed Chris Conley in free agency, and they believe that his best football is ahead of him, and they may be right on that. I do think they're trying to find the next Allen Hurns, the next Keelan Cole. They signed five undrafted free agents. Five of their 21 were receivers, and there's some pretty good contenders on there. Mm-hmm. So could that be a storyline that develops, you know, in August when these guys really start to get into the meat of training camp? It wouldn't surprise me, because they've done a pretty good job of being able to find some hidden gems at the receiver spot outside of the draft. So I think it's a concern, though, because you just don't know where Marquise Lee will be. Doug Marrone, you know, hinted that it could be more late in the preseason when he returns. And you pretty much can count on one of the other guys probably getting hurt in training camp. You hope it's not serious like Marquise's was. But normally this team has one or two receivers that tend to, you know, have some sort of soft tissue injury during camp. And right now they just don't have the numbers to support that. If Marquise is slow to come back, and you lose another guy between Didi, Chark, Conley, and Cole, it starts to really get thin.
We're tight here on time, so I'm going to go through just skip over the trenches, both offensively and defensively. I basically agree with you, and I'll invite the listeners to go again and read it at 1010XL.com. Linebackers as well, but I do want to spend our final 2 moments here on the defensive backfield, because, again, I'm really concerned here. I think the top three corners are fantastic. So much youth right now. It's safety, not a lot of big game experience. What, less than 10 starts between Harrison and Wilson? And boy, no depth at all right now at safety.
Safety, I think, is the weakest spot on the roster right now. I think it's close, you know, tight end, but the selection of Josh Oliver in the third round, I think, certainly helps. Yeah, safety's tough. I mean, I ended up putting C.J. Revis and Cody Brown on the 53. Cody Brown, I think, is the 53rd player on the roster. He was the kid that had the successful stint in the doomed AAF. But it's slim. I think that will be – we're starting to see a waiver wire churn at linebacker, which could tell us something about where the Telvin Smith situation is going. I think you're going to start to see a churn at safety, particularly once we get into training camp. I think any safety that gets released will certainly be a candidate for a pickup here with the Jaguars, because safety is, in my opinion, a huge concern.
All right, it's a really good read. Go ahead and check it out. Go to our website, 1010XL.com. Hey, if it's third and long, make sure you run the old 39 periwinkle.
I love it. I'll put that in.
All right, Hayes. Great stuff. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Rick.
All right, Hayes Carline, each and every afternoon, you got him here with Frank and Lauren. And, you know, it takes a lot of effort to put one of these out, 53-man roster. And I did a real nice job with it. Tell you what I'm going to do. When I come back, I'm going to kind of go over this again. And if you would like to join the conversation, a couple of ways you can. 641-1010. You can text me as well at 641-1010. You can call or text. Or you can hit me up on Twitter, BALLOU1010XL. You look at the 53-man roster, you do see some holes. We'll discuss those next as we go into the night with Rick Ballew.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Ah, some lovemaking music. Yeah. It's all about the lyrics. Bob Seger loves to write about the one that got away. I mean, you think about Seger and his tunes. They are so often about the one he just couldn't keep happy. Hey, Bob, I got news for you. It's next to impossible to keep him happy, all right? He made millions about it, though, writing. Sunday in town. Over at Daly's Place, 74 years young. His birthday on Monday was Bob Seger. Looking forward to seeing him this weekend. Still looking for tickets. I know they're out there. I'll find them. Mini camp for the rookies begins on Monday. We are not able to watch them practice this year. After the workout on Friday, did I say Monday? It's Friday. It'll be this Friday. It's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. There is media availability after Friday's workout at 12:15. Coach Marone, Josh Allen, and Juwan Taylor, they're going to be available to the media. I am also going to have an interview with Quincy Williams, and I'm looking forward to talking with this young man. But one of the things that was always fun to observe during the rookie minicamp was obviously team speed, because there's no hitting. It's tough to evaluate guys in the ditch, and that'll include this time around Juwan Taylor, Josh Allen. Although you can get a little bit better of a feel of a guy like Allen, because during some drills you can watch his bend, his first step, things like that. But you can look for leadership. You can look for motors that are always running. Out of all the rookie minicamps I ever went to, the one that sticks out to me more than ever was Telvin Smith during that great draft class. You could feel it. You could see him emerging as a leader. But now that we've gone through this 53-man roster, and Hayes Carline joined me just a couple of minutes ago, I agree with Hayes' answer. This is not as strong as a roster this year as it was last year. It's just not. That's the truth. Now, the expectations were crazy a year ago. But what I'm trying to do here is forget about the preseason expectations and just look at the roster. And there's a ton of holes. Now, every team has them. I didn't show up here tonight again as a, as a downer. That's not my role. Okay, I've had a wonderful day. It's been spectacular. I'm in a tremendous mood. But it's not as good as last year's roster. It's got a chance to be a better team, obviously, because they only won 5 games. But what I'm trying to look at right now, what I'm trying to state right now, is that I still believe there's more than just some tweaks to do on this roster. Nick Foles can play, and he can complete passes and move the football downfield. The Jaguars automatically become a better football team. They were atrocious last year in that offensive line. Okay, the year prior to that, it was the lowest amount of sacks they had allowed in more than a decade. And if you remember the first, 3 years of Blake Bortles' career, I almost said that he was on his back more than, I'm not going to say that. I'm too good of a guy. But he was on his back a whole heck of a lot. In 2017, it was the best protection of Blake Bortles in more than 10 years. Boy, that got away from them a year ago. Blake was back on his back. And the offensive line was ripped apart. But now then, you got the expectations. 4/5 of the offensive line returns. And you plug in a rookie at right tackle. I think the offensive line is going to be good. Is it going to show some warts and some growing pains? Yeah. Andrew Norwell has to be a monster. You paid him for that. Cam Robinson now is entering year 3 of his 4-year deal. He wasn't a first rounder. He was a second rounder. Therefore, he can get paid a year earlier. He has a great season. He's next in line. After you pay Jalen, you pay Unique, you figure out what we're going to do with Miles Jack. That's a pleasant problem, folks. You want these guys coming up on their deal. You know when you're a good football team? When you're worried about re-signing your own draft picks. You haven't had to deal with that a lot around here. What if that happens with a guy like Cam Robinson? You hope so. Right now, what's the bet on that in town? Probably 50-50, isn't it? A little bit out of shape a year ago, a little heavy, not great footwork. Still, an opportunity to turn that right around. He's a young man. They're not nearly as strong in the backfield right now as they were last year at this point. Remember last year, you had Fournette coming off a good rookie year. You had T.J. Yeldon, who is a good third down back. Forget about all the crap with T.J. Yeldon. He picked up first downs running. He picked up first downs catching the ball. And he also stonewalled linebackers or ends if he was asked to stay in and pass block. Right now, I don't know who their third down back is. That's a concern with Nick Foles' game. I think when you think Nick Foles, and I apologize for saying I think when you think, but when you look at Nick Foles, I think you drool a little bit about the possibility of the bomb. You seen Jaws?
Of course.
You seen when Robert Shaw talks about when they delivered the bomb?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Just wanted to know, because I guess we found out you didn't know, you'd never seen Easy Rider.
No, I've definitely seen the Jaws. Okay. I've seen all of them.
Robert Shaw, Roy Schneider, Richard Dreyfuss, they're getting wasted in the boat. The bottom of the boat.
Those movies are the reason I don't really get too deep into the beach, though.
You and I got that in common. But they delivered the bomb. That's kind of what Jaguar fans are thinking about Nick Foles. Deliver the bomb. Right? And the USS Indianapolis. Nick Foles' bread and butter is moving the chains. The dump-down variety, 10 yards or less. A tight end, and all of a sudden, A lot of pressure on a rookie tight end who played at San Jose State. And I think it's going to work. Are we taping right now? I'm going to go on record. I think it's going to work. Foles to Oliver. Who's going to catch the ball out of the backfield? They don't have a third down back. 69 balls in 5 years for Al Blue. And I think it's 39 balls in 4 years for Thomas Rawls. Concerned about that. Sixth wide receiver, absolutely need to find one. What I started with talking about the rookie minicamp, every host on this station at some point will show up one day with the obligatory question that sounds a little bit like this. How many undrafted free agents make the roster, and who will they be? That's my point right now with this conversation. I don't think you can lean on undrafted free agents to become your sixth wide receiver, your depth at safety. Heck, I don't even think they have. They're not even bringing in a running back, so you can't go to the third down back for that particular conversation. I just don't think you can lean on it. I don't think you can rely on it. So after going through this exercise, if you will, and really looking at this roster, in my opinion, they still need, after free agency in the NFL draft, a third down back, a blocking tight end, another wide receiver, and at least two guys to help out in the contain. Absolutely one of those at safety, probably the other at corner, if not two safeties. I'm okay with the defensive line. I'm okay with linebacker. I'm okay with the offensive line. I'm okay with quarterback. Now, you can do this with every team in every city, including great teams, including playoff teams. I'm not trying to throw this out there where the world really is flat and that it's coming to an end. I'm not. These are common concerns for all 32 NFL teams. And I supported them throughout free agency, and I actually liked what they did in the NFL draft. And I heard the criticism that came in the NFL draft with their third-round selections, particularly their second third-round selection. That would have been a tremendous opportunity right there to maybe get a safety or to maybe get a third-down back. They elected to get a back in the fifth round. He's a two-down back. He's a, you know, this guy's a, he's a guy who runs downhill. He's a run between the guards, a run between, you know, the line of scrimmage. Big back, 5'11", 220, who doesn't catch the football. Now, I trust the organization. They know a heck of a lot more about scouting and doing their job than I do. But I throw this out there because I want to see this football team do better than they did a year ago. I don't want another 5-11 around here. Everyone's miserable when they're 5-11. The good news is this. The positions that you need to add, you can. If I was sitting here pounding the table saying, you need a quarterback, a left tackle, a running back, a shutdown corner, a pass rush defensive end, then there would be a case for really a lot of worrisome. I'm not saying that. I'm saying you need a third down back. You can find third down backs. I'm saying you need a blocking tight end. You can find a blocking tight end. I'm saying you need a veteran and some depth at wide receiver, maybe a fifth or sixth wide receiver. Because if you look at the current wide receiving core, you have to believe that one of those guys at least is going to go down with an injury. I mean, you just have to. You can find all those parts. You can find depth at safety. It's not like I'm saying go out and get a starting safety. It's not like I'm saying cut a guy, create some money, and go sign Eric Berry. No, no. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, can you find someone out there? What do you have for combined starts right now with Jared Wilson and Ronnie Harrison? It's got to be less than 10. Look at what you had. That's why last year's roster is better. DeShaun Gibson and Barry Church. Okay, their skills went away. Barry Church showed up one day and he could no longer run. DeShaun Gibson made a ton of money. They had to make that. I get it. But still, a ton of experience. And they played a ton of minutes, a ton of plays. The offense couldn't move the chains. Three and out, turnover, three and out. What happens? The defense has to play. Get tired, get worn down. So they do need to fill in some of these spots. But it's not a panic. These are spots that you can find out there on the street. Available free agents. Guys who will be cut. Rookies who are out there somewhere on another practice squad or trying to make a team. So it's not as bad as it may appear. There are some reasons for concern. But again, that's standard across the league. All right, good stuff there. Make sure you read Hayes Carline. Go to 1010XL.com. Really good piece he put together on the projection of the Jaguars' 53-man roster. When I do return to begin hour number two, the I'm going to create a new word here, the bozo-ness of certain members within the esteemed media, including this one knucklehead who came forward with his college football list for college coaches and rankings. It comes from a basketball part of the country, so I guess I should have considered that. But really, as far as I'm concerned, it's a fireable offense. I'll explain next.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Already concerned about visiting the dentist tomorrow. First of all, I go to the dentist too much. I think some would say going once a year is too much. But I typically go 3 to 4 times a year. And my teeth are just so freaking sensitive. It's unbelievable. I mean, I drink a cold beer and my mouth freaks out. I bite into an ice cream, same deal. Even now when I brush my teeth, it hurts on the right side. So, I mean, you think it's a racket when you bring your vehicle in? Try bringing your mouth in to the world of dentistry. I mean, they're like, sir, I think you need new caps. Sir, you need, what's it called, root canal. You need this, you need that. I'm like, I brush my teeth 3-4 times. It doesn't matter. It's deep gum buildup. Oh, and then they always go to the, you grind your teeth when you sleep. You need a guard. And I'm like, okay, well, then I'll go to the store and get one of those mouth guards that I used to wear when I played hockey and football, and I'll boil it in a pot of water, and I'll stick that in my mouth. Oh, no, 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 no. That's not going to work. Why doesn't that work? It costs $2.99. I won't grip my teeth. No, you need the specially made one that we can provide. It's really cheap. It's only like $1,000 a week. But
heck, you can even get like specifically, you know, teeth-related ones for like grinding just at a Walgreens or something for like $20.
Now, like I told you, it's a racket. I mean, it is. It's like a legalized, it should be part of the RICO Act as far as I'm concerned. I mean, honestly, It is. But anyway, they're good people. I go in there. But I do. I get nervous. I get painkillers. I shouldn't say this, but I am anyway, because I am the truth teller. But I have painkillers when I've actually hurt myself. Hurt my back, whatever. I don't use them, except when I know I'm going to the dentist. And then I ask for, like, the extra douse or dose of Novocaine, and it still doesn't work. So I talked with her the other day. Tomorrow, for the first time ever, I'm finally going to get the gas. I'm told when you get the gas, you don't feel anything. You ever done the gas before?
Can't say that I have, no.
I'm going in there tomorrow. What I would like to know, maybe you can help me out on this, because I don't want to make the mistake and do it and then go and then be told that I can't do it. I should have asked this question. Can I take a painkiller before I go in and then get the gas? Or is there like something written somewhere that says you absolutely can't take a painkiller because then if you take the gas, you'll never wake up again? So if anyone knows that answer, please hit me up on the text line. 641-1010, or you can tweet me, Ballou, B-A-L-L-O-U, 1010X. I don't worry about a lot of things, but I do worry about going to the dentist. And you would think the way I'm describing it, I'd be a guy who never goes and doesn't take care of my teeth. That's not the case. I do. But damn, are they sensitive. All right, it seems like this week, it's funny how things kind of run in unison. But this week became pretty popular for a lot of the pundits out there to create their own rankings in the world of college football coaches. And I'm not even going to mention the guy's name because it's such a terrible effort and terrible job that, honestly, I think it's a fireable offense. But he writes for the Louisville, I think it's the Post and Courier. And he put together the combination of his list, the SEC and the ACC. All right, Dabo Swinney, number one, Nick Saban, number two. All right off the get-go, that's a mistake. It's a six-pack argument, but it's a mistake. Nick Saban is the greatest coach in college football. Dabo Swinney is arguably on the cusp of taking that away. But at this point, Dabo Swinney has accomplished about one-third of what Nick Saban has. So he's already wrong there. But this is where it really becomes just atrocious. He selects Dan Mullen as the third overall best coach combined in the SEC and the ACC over Kirby Smart 4 and Jimbo Fisher 5. And what's even more alarming to me is this. If this was written in the Gainesville Sun, then maybe I would understand it a little bit. You're trying to sell a newspaper. But this is out of the Louisville Rag. And it is absolutely beyond any sort of explanation that I can come up with as to why a college football writer would put Dan Mullen in third. I mean, I don't care which way you look at this and what your criteria is, what your information is, what your reasoning is. Dan Mullen's not a better coach than Jimbo Fisher. Dan Mullen is not a better coach than Kirby Smart. There's zero proof of that. Gus Malzahn, number six. All right, I'm all right with that. I think he's a good coach. He's going to be on the firing line every year. I still think he's a good coach. Dave Clawson, number seven. All right, there you go. He's trying to show us that he knows a little something that we don't. He's going to give us that whole Wake Forest situation. They don't recruit as well. They don't have the talent as well. They have academic, whatever. You're losing points with me when you tell me that Dave Clawson is the seventh best coach combined in the SEC-ACC. All right, that reeks of me telling you that you should stick with basketball. Dave Doran. Dave Doran is a miserable human being. He's a good coach. He is a miserable guy. I actually think Dave Doran, if he was given a blue chip job, would do well with it. I don't mind that selection. Pat Narduzzi's a better coach than Dave Clawson. Has him at 9. David Cutcliffe. Respect that tremendously. Mark Stoops at number 11. Mark Stoops is getting a little bit of credit here because he is the local coach and he's the longest tenured coach in the SEC East. But come on. It's Mark Stoops. If Mark Stoops actually did anything at Kentucky, he'd be out of there by now. He'd be James Franklin, who went to Penn State. He'd be Dan Mullen, who went to Florida. He's still at Kentucky. And when's the last time you've heard of anyone saying, boy, I wish we could lure Mark Stoops out of Lexington? You're not hearing it. Matter of fact, I talked with Josh Allen about it the day after he was selected. Booger McFarland went on a long rant saying that those Kentucky coaches, those Kentucky coaches did a terrible job with Josh Allen. And that more than anything, he needs better coaching. Dino Babers at number 12, that's too high. Brocco Mendenhall at number 13, all right. Will Muschamp at 14. You know, I guess what I should do is really tell you that more of the problems that I have. He's got Eddie Orgeron at 16. What does this guy have to do to earn some freaking respect? How can you tell me that there are 15 better coaches combined in the ACC or SEC than Ed Orgeron? There's not. Ed Orgeron's a better coach than Will Muschamp. Ed Orgeron's a better coach than Mark Stoops. Ed Orgeron's a better coach than Dave Clawson. Why is he not getting the respect? He's got Manny Diaz at 20. Okay, he's never coached before. We'll see. Justin Fuente at 21. That's too low. He's a good coach. Mack Brown at 23. Is he not aware of what Mack Brown did at North Carolina? Is he not aware of what Mack Brown did at Texas? How do you rank Mack Brown the 23rd best coach in college football? Okay, he's been out of the game for a little bit. Has the game passed him by? Still, you got Derek Mason ranked ahead of him. Scott Satterfield ranked ahead of him. Joe Moorhead ranked ahead of him. Barry Odom ranked ahead of him. Steve Adazio ranked ahead of him. Jeremy Pruitt, 24, and I have a problem with that. Chad Morris, 25, and I have a problem. Jeff Collins, Mallet. Willie Taggart, last at number 28. Honestly, I like this. And I hope it gets pinned up right on Willie Taggart's door. Anything that will light a fire under Willie Taggart's ass, I'm all for. Because let's not get lost in the fact that Willie Taggart had an atrocious year at Florida. Not a bad year, an atrocious year at Florida State. In every sense of the word. I mean, everything he did was wrong. So I don't mind the ranking here for Willie Taggart. But my problem is Mack Brown at 23, Ed Orgeron at 16, and how in the hell is Dan Mullen in at number 3? Honestly, please, someone out there, explain this to me. And you're a fan. You don't have to be honest. You don't have to be objective. You can be a fan. But how can you rank Dan Mullen ahead of Kirby Smart and Jimbo Fisher? Seriously. Just give me one piece, one little snippet, one little tiny bit of material that defends that particular ranking. That's all I'm asking for tonight. So there you have it. I guess it worked for this man at the Post and Courier based out of Louisville because guys like me here in the Deep South are going to react to it. But, you know, it's all subjective. He put in the effort. but it's just awful. I mean, it is just, it's almost as if his editor said, oh, yeah, well, you know, I'm going on vacation. Hey, before you go on vacation, give me your top 28 combined ACC, SEC. And he wrote it from, you know, the runway before he hopped on a plane for Aruba or something. I mean, this is truly, this is a fireable offense. And I say that, where this small fraternity, I've never really been one to really try to bury others. But this is complete horse, you know what. Seriously, he should not be allowed to cover college football when you create a list that is this asinine. All right. Truth Teller News and Notes are coming up. They are brought to you each and every night by our good friends over at truckcrashlaw.com.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, get some Bob. Bob Seger. See him rocking out to Her Strut at the age of 74 on Sunday night. Always love the lyrics to this song, especially when he goes, oh, but they do respect her butt. They love to watch her strut.
Ooh, wee.
What?
You see that booty?
Yeah, I always wondered about that line. Oh, they do respect her butt. I always thought of it, you know, kind of both ways. You know, they respect her butt, or they respect her butt, B-U-T-T. Yeah, that's just the way that I'm wired. But I can't be the only one out there who thinks that. You know, there are like certain songs, certain situations where you hear something and it's got a couple of meanings. You respect her butt, or you respect her butt. Yeah, we'll see. Sunday night, Bob Seger, great stuff. This is actually one about that didn't get away. It was really about one that you really had no chance at. Sometimes they'll want her to leave, just give up and leave her, but they would never play that scene. In spite of all her talking, once she starts a-walking, the lady will be all they ever dreamed. I mean, that's deep right there. Those are great lyrics. I don't know if Rob Zombie was giving me those lyrics Saturday night at Rockville. I just don't think he was. But we'll see it down at Daly's Place coming up on Sunday. Should be a lot of fun. All right, before we get to Truth Teller News and Notes, do you realize that Christian Yelich hit his 16th home run of the season today? He right now has 16 home runs, 37 RBIs, and he's hitting .356, and it's only the eighth day of May. How's that? I mean, you talk about, I think before the season began, we just handed Bryce Harper the National League MVP. We handed Mike Trout the American League MVP. Well, I got news for you. Cody Bellinger and Christian Yelich, what they are doing right now in the National League is absolutely scary. Hey, we had a no-hitter last night. For those of you who weren't aware of it, Mike Friars, his second career no-hitter, Mike Friars. You know, he did it last night for the Oakland A's. It's the second time in his career that he has thrown a no-hitter. 300th in the career of Major League Baseball. So I was looking through some numbers today. Of course, I went back to Nolan Ryan, who threw seven no-hitters in his career, did Nolan Ryan. I think often that in the world of sports, whenever we talk about streaks that'll never be broken or records that will never be broken, seems like Joe DiMaggio in the 56-game hit streak, for one reason or another, gets all the love, gets the most attention. And it's an incredible feat. And I don't know if it'll ever be broken again in the history of Major League Baseball, but it has been broken in some other circles. As a matter of fact, I believe Robin Ventura broke it at Oklahoma State in college baseball. You know, we've seen guys flirt with it, Pete Rose, Paul Molitor, among others. It's still a phenomenal achievement. But you look at what Nolan Ryan did. He threw seven no-hitters. Seven. He also struck out 5,714 batters. All right, we were talking about it the other day where CC Sabathia, I think he became only the 23rd player in the history of Major League Baseball to have more than 3,000 career strikeouts. Okay, and if you look at those numbers, the only two players in the history of the game who are not in the Hall of Fame who have 3,000 or more strikeouts are Roger Clemens, obviously because Roger Clemens is still up against the steroid allegations, and Curt Schilling, who has hurt himself because of things that he says politically speaking. And, you know, today you can't make that mistake. You got to tell the media what they want to hear, and if you question them or say something that they don't agree with, it's going to cost you in a lot of places, including at the Hall of Fame box and ballot. There's actually 17 players in the history of the game. All right, the great Randy Johnson, 48-75. Roger Clemens, 46-72. Nolan Ryan's got 1,000 more than them. 5,714. There's a mark right there that'll absolutely positively never be run down when it's all said and done. There's a chance for 3,000 strikeouts. Justin Verlander could do it maybe as early as next year, and Max Scherzer could do it, let's say, by the year 2021, maybe the year 2022. But anyway, a little bit of baseball there to get things started. Tonight, news and notes each and every night brought to you by TruckCrashLaw.com. They're the only law firm in the state of Florida where this is all they do. This is their expertise. This is their field. And if someone's been injured out on the road, okay, in an accident, and it was created by a truck, a tractor trailer, an RV, a bus, anything along those lines, as difficult as things may be, make sure you contact the good folks at TruckCrashLaw.com. Again, they're based in Jacksonville, but they're the only law firm in the state of Florida that does this. All right, interesting report that came out today out of the New York Post involved with the National Football League Network. And the way I always understood the NFL Network is that it's owned by the National Football League. They control the programming, the hiring. Obviously, they don't dictate the content that goes into the shows, but they are the resource behind it. They finance everything that goes into the NFL Network. It is their operation. They're slashing $20 million from their budget. And it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me if you really consider how much money the National Football League makes right now. I mean, it's making billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars. Yet they're going into the NFL Network, which has turned in to an outstanding product. I don't think I've ever met anyone who is not a fan of the NFL Network. As I say all the time, I find myself leaving ESPN, and I am an NFL Network guy. I am a Major League Baseball Network guy. The NHL Network, the Golf Channel, this is where I go. I live on these channels now to get my fix for sports. I almost never go to ESPN anymore, really for anything outside of watching games. They're going to take out Deion Sanders, the 21 in Prime Show, Power Rankings, Pick'em, Playbook, Mic'd Up, and they're also considering saying goodbye to the weekend edition of Good Morning Football. So $20 million worth of slashes at the NFL Network. This is according to a report that came out today in the New York Post. All right, gambling. You know, it's interesting how we talk about it related to sports and how it's really affected officiating. All right, you know it. Hardwood, ice. Go back to the NFC Championship game. The stewards the other day at the big race out at the Kentucky Derby. Well, forever the NCAA said that they wouldn't allow championship events in states that legalized gambling. Way back when, that would only affect the great state of Nevada. Well, what did we hear earlier in the week when it came to the NCAA? Involved now with some other things that could involve actually producing college football injury reports, which you and I know is strictly for the gambler. Here it is 72 hours later. Here comes another report. This one states that Delaware, Mississippi, New Jersey, New Mexico, Rhode Island, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and of course Nevada, the eight states where gambling is legalized in the world of gaming in athletic events, are now allowed to have championship events. Folks, the one-time strong backbone of college athletics in general, the NCAA, where they would take a look at a Division III archery story, and if it was on their desk before a powerhouse in college football, the NCAA, with gender equity and Title IX and equal rights, they damn well were going to give that attention to that archery school out in Alaska. And by the way, archery is huge in Alaska. Now the NCAA is bending. They're folding right in front of us. Let's legalize gambling. Let's produce injury reports in college football. And while we're at it, big money comes out of New Jersey. Big money comes out of Pennsylvania. Mississippi's smack dab in the middle of the SEC. This is what they're doing. They're breaking once again. Gambling becoming more and more of a factor in the world of professional gambling. More examples continue to roll in. Le'Veon Bell, this story really disturbs me. I understand voluntary. I do. It means you better have your ass there. No, I understand voluntary. I do. I don't have a problem that Jalen's not there. My problem with Telvin has always been the lack of communication. I understand what Unique did. When you sit out a year like Le'Veon Bell and you cast yourself as a bad apple and a bad teammate and a selfish individual, and you have a chance to go far as a playoff team in Pittsburgh, but you're pouting and you're crying and you're complaining, and then you don't get paid what you thought you were worth. You got $27 million guaranteed. Well, he left $15 million on the table a year ago. I think the correct term was $14.4 million. He just left it there. And he lost a year. So he gets $52.5 million over four. He'll never see that. He'll see his $27 million. That's fully guaranteed. But now he goes to New York, where they have a rookie quarterback getting ready for year two. They have a brand new coach, a brand new system, a totally new look. And Le'Veon Bell once again is exercising his right not to show up. There's a time and a place. And for Le'Veon Bell, this is a massive mistake. It really is. He's already putting himself far behind the eight ball in New York. We're just starving for a winner. And I understand the spirit of the rule. You can't sign Le'Veon Bell in the offseason, and before he signs the dotted line, you say, now, Le'Veon, you'll be there for the voluntary part of minicamp, right? That's against the collective bargaining agreement. You can't do that. But this story just really smells to me. It really does. Imagine if Nick Foles signed with the Jacksonville Jaguars. and didn't show up for voluntary minicamp. Because that's the exact thing that's going on right now in New York. Because I can see it right now, and I'll get ready to check my social media here during the break. I'm going to get the standard, hey, Baloo, who cares if Le'Veon Bell shows up? It's voluntary. Ask yourself this question. If this was in Jacksonville and Nick Foles didn't show up, how pissed off would you be after signing a huge contract? Le'Veon Bell's doing that now in New York, and he missed the entire season in 2018. You know, seriously, from the outside looking in, clearly that's my opinion. But when you see stuff like this, you can't help but root against them. Seriously, that's just human nature for me. I don't have anything against Le'Veon Bell. Okay, I watched the Jaguars beat him every time they faced him a couple of years ago. I watched him blow a huge lead this year in Jacksonville. That gut-wrenching loss, he wasn't on the field. I don't have a problem with Le'Veon Bell. But when you read stuff like this, it changes your opinion on a guy. He needs to stick to his system, his formula. His formula includes staying as far away from the New York Jets as he possibly can. It's a terrible story. It really is. And it's a crying shame. All right, Truth Teller News and Notes. Each and every night brought to you by TruckCrashLaw.com. They're the only law firm in the state of Florida where it is pretty simple. If a family member, a friend has been injured out on the road, it happened because of a truck, a tractor trailer, an RV, a bus, anything on those lines, and there was a serious injury or it even could have been fatal. It's an awful situation. But you need to know the name TruckCrashLaw.com because they are there for you. And again, they are the only law firm in the state of Florida who does this. This is their expertise, and they're based right here in Jacksonville. All right, is the ball juiced? John Lester wants to know. I want to know. That plus more coming up.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
I'm getting some mixed reviews here on my trip to the dentist tomorrow. I don't like what I'm getting. The 5895 says you won't need the pill. The pill is the painkiller with the gas. I usually do the exact same thing. The gas is magic. Yeah, I like that. But then I get it from the 3681 who says, yes, take the damn painkiller first. I mean, those two couldn't be any more opposite.
Did get a call shortly after you asked that out. It sounded like it was a doctor. He didn't explicitly say, but he said, you do not want to go down that route of doing both of those.
Oh, and you didn't tell me.
I'll spend it to get to it.
Mm-hmm. I see how things work around here. Very interesting. All right, so sounded like a doc?
Yeah, he said, I mean, the way he's explaining just the anatomy and everything behind it, he said both of them act as a narcotic in the brain, so you don't want all of those, you know, different things transmitted in your brain, which could mess things up.
Yeah, I know when I go it's going to be a big deal because it will be unusual, but I don't want it to be routine checkup at the dentist where he went under the gas for the first time ever. But he popped a painkiller 10 minutes before he arrived. That's why I asked. That's why I trust the people. The people have spoken. I'm going to take the pain tomorrow. I really am. It really is cowardly. It is. I mean, I really get nervous about this. And I don't know why it is. I have no problem with needles. I've had surgery. I mean, I've taken pucks, hard rubber, frozen pucks off of every little part of my body that you can think of. Stood in front of ground balls, played football. Not scared. I mean, plenty. I've been punched in the face. There's just something about them going in there with all those tools in my mouth. It's just so sensitive. Because when you really hit it, when you hit a root, I mean, bro, I mean, I just assume, seriously, get run over by a pack of balls.
That's one of the worst pains right there.
It is. But the thing is you're in the chair, and you're anticipating that pain. And you don't know if it's going to come. Like, you can get yourself all geeked out for a shot. I know people really hate needles. And I'm okay with needles. And, you know, it's got the prick, you know, the prickly feel, and it hurts and all this. But you can prepare yourself for it. You know it's coming. You don't know when it's coming when they're going to hit a tooth and if they're going to hit a nerve in that tooth. And there's no way to really mentally prepare yourself for that. So I'm hoping this gas really works. This is going to be my first time ever for the gas. So I'll let you guys know tomorrow night. Now, what happens? It just knocks you out, or you stoned, you know? You don't know. You've never been. All right. Well, I'm going to guinea pig it tomorrow. So that should be pretty cool. Hey, John Lester wants Major League Baseball to admit that the balls are juiced. This is a great story. It really has because, you know, listen, PEDs, steroids, it's been kind of mild around here. It's been kind of laid back. I mean, you haven't heard a lot of guys getting popped in the bigs. Either the chemist is ahead of the league or they adopted the new XFL's drug testing way about it. Where they're not even going to trust, they're not even going to test for dope in the XFL. Reportedly, that story is out there.
Stay off the weed.
But David Price said it last week before he went on the 10-day disabled list. I guess it's the injured list, not the disabled list. That Major League Baseball just needs to come clean and admit that these balls are juice. And you look at a guy like John Lester, who's been around forever. And he's talking about the difference in these balls, how they're totally white now. They look that they come straight out of the box. You can't rub them the way you used to. And, you know, the way that these balls are designed, the drag that goes on the ball that is something that pitchers are aware of, that, you know, when you rub the baseball, the range of variation, they know how to eliminate this, eliminate that, and they're always looking for something that's called the drag that goes down the ball. And the farther that you can get the drag to go down on the baseball, you're going to have less home runs, according to a pitcher. Now, I have no idea what the drag means. This is their literature. This is their vocabulary. All right? This is what they talk about. You know, you see these guys all the time sitting in the bullpen. Yeah, of course, they're talking about chicks, and they're talking about great restaurants and movies, but they talk a lot of baseball. That's what they do in this game. And it's always about getting the advantage. And rubbing down balls is something that pitchers have done forever. And apparently they're not allowing them to do that as much now as they once did. They're literally taking these balls right out of the box. And John Lester's like to the commissioner, Rob Manfred, admit that these balls are juiced. Rob Manfred has gone on to say that baseballs are handmade. Every baseball is handmade, which I do find pretty intriguing. I would think that with everything that we have seen in our world, technology-wise, that they would be more machine-operated. But according to Rob Manfred, who's the commissioner, he says they still are a handmade product, exclusively made from natural products. The results, because it's human and natural, are going to vary in baseballs. I think that's a bunch of crap. Seriously. I mean, what are you going to do now? Bring in scientists to measure these balls? Pitchers know. Hitters know. I was talking to a buddy of mine the other day and we were playing golf. I'm like, bro, I can't tell the difference in a golf ball. He's like, are you kidding me? You can't tell the difference between a Titleist and a Pinnacle or a Titleist and a Terra? I'm like, you know, sometimes when I putt, I can feel that one ball is a little bit softer than another ball. But for the most part, if you blindfolded me, no. I can't figure that out. You know, if you blindfold me and give me a Miller Lite or a Bud Light, I can tell you which is which. If you blindfold me and give me a Diet Coke and a Sprite, I can tell you which is which. But if you blindfold me and line me up over a 100-yard wedge and try to get me to guess whether or not it was a top flight or a Titleist, I don't have that in me. I don't have that skill. I don't have that feel. These pitchers know what's going on with these baseballs. And it's being said now more and more and more and more and more that the balls are juiced. They're flying out of Major League Baseball stadiums at a record pace. Last year were the most home runs in the history of the game. This year is on pace to break last year. We're also on a pace for more strikeouts in Major League Baseball than we have ever had in the game. Baseball's turning into a little bit of beer league softball. And I hate it because I love the game. But we don't see the bunts. We don't see the triples. We don't see the stolen base. We don't see the manufacturing of runs anymore. It's pretty simple. It's the long ball. And it's the pitcher striking out the hitter. That's where this game is gone. But this story is going to be something. I really believe that. I got to trust a guy like John Lester. I do. I believe that if he sees it and as much pitching as he's done, he knows it. He's talking about the feel of a golf ball. This guy knows the feel of a baseball. And people in the game right now believe that the balls are being juiced. So we'll see. It's a fixable problem. The players being juiced was a fixable problem. It just took about a decade plus to solve it. I just thought his answer was bizarre. Handmade product with natural, you know, handmade product with natural products. That's his word. Therefore, it's going to vary because every guy, every human who does it is going to do it a little bit differently. And when you add natural products to it, the end result's going to be a little bit different. I don't think people want to hear that now. I mean, manufacture them all the same. Anyway, there you go. To be determined. We'll keep you updated on that as we move through the tremendous summer of Major League Baseball. All right, we've got some important games tonight, including a Game 7 that is getting ready to take place here tonight out in San Jose. That is coming up in just about 10 minutes. Very important one tonight between the Sharks and the Avalanche. Milwaukee. Boy, Boston's just looking like they didn't even want to be there. They've scored 23 points now with 6 minutes to go in the second quarter. Just not a good look tonight. I was asked earlier today who I thought would win this game. I think Milwaukee was favored by 6. I said, absolutely. Take Milwaukee tonight. I think Boston is just, they've quit on one another. They don't like each other. It's like the old Charlie Finley Oakland days, for crying out loud. Now, they can't stand Kyrie Irving. Then Game 5 coming up tonight, the Rockets and the Warriors. That series all locked at 2.
Now, the 2-Minute Drill, delivered by Moe's Southwest Grill.
Welcome to Moe's!
At Moe's, our caterings come with everything except leftovers. Order your office private event or tailgate catering today online at moescateringfl.com.
Getting cold out there?
I'm always a sweatshirt guy.
Are you?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like 85 degrees out.
Yeah. I'm all a sweatshirt right. guy at, in the evening. I sweat my butt off all day.
Okay.
And then
you don't
want to
get a
reason,
chill.
Yeah. It's cold in here usually.
Yeah. Well, you know why?
Why?
This show is so damn boring that if it was any warmer, I mean, look at LeVay, for crying out loud. He's over there yawning. I mean, I'd fall asleep. So we got to turn the temperature
down.
Well,
that's what they get for not letting us drink while we do these things. It's management's fault.
Whoa! Yes. Absolutely. What's coming up tonight?
I think James has some college football news he wants to get into.
At least, yeah?
I haven't talked to him, but I've seen his Twitter all day today talking about people being suspended and all that kind of stuff. So I haven't even Googled it because I just want to hear it from him. And then there's this interesting thing going on with quarterbacks in the NFL. There's 8 of them do long-term deals.
I love it. And, it's one of my favorite conversations.
There's an interesting write-up today. I don't know if you saw it on Pro Football Talk.
I did.
About
yeah.
Which ones may get shut out. So we're going to look into that a little bit as well.
It's interesting because I think I mentioned it, on Monday. I centered it around Winston, Mariota, obviously Dak Prescott. But then you also start to look at some of these aging guys like Phillip Rivers and Drew Brees, even Tom Brady. I mean, how much do you want to pay these guys? They're still doing it right now, but you know in this game, it could be over in an instant.
Well, and the other interesting piece of this is this uncapped year coming,
mm-hmm.
you know, depending on what happens. So how many of these younger guys force that tag up until that uncapped year and then break the bank?
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of things at play right now. If I'm Jalen, I'm accepting these tags right now, trying to get to 2022 when the cap resets, basically.
Yeah, and they've been put in that situation. I've always honestly kind of liked the tag, and I love the way that a guy like Walter Jones used it. Mm-hmm. Walter Jones said, here's the deal. I'll be there 17 weeks a year.
Yeah.
I'll be somewhere else the entire offseason. I'll be in shape. I'll show up the first week of the year, and I'll be a Pro Bowl left tackle. You want to pay me the ultimate amount of money? Fine. But I'm not going to practice. I'm not going to be there during the offseason. And I'm going to be a Pro Bowl guy.
You know who I think? He's an overrated quarterback, but if you look at how he handled his contract situation, people should take notes. Is Kirk Cousins.
Mm-hmm.
Kirk Cousins tagged himself to about $40 million in guaranteed money and then went out and got another $85 in guarantee.
It's really fascinating.
It is.
I'm looking forward to hearing it because right now I think it's about split down the middle. Some of these quarterbacks is whether or not – even Dak Prescott, are you willing to – is he the guy – for the future for the Dallas Cowboys.
It is interesting.
You're
taking a gamble either way.
Yeah, I mean, I think he is, but the thing is you got to pay him the most amount. You can't ask for hometown discounts.
No.
You got to pay him over $30 million a year. That's the going rate.
I think Dak Prescott is the second most interesting one behind Jameis.
Yeah.
And we'll get into those thoughts tonight, but it's a – tough decision for a GM to make.
I look forward to hearing that. Yeah, with Jameis, man, I wouldn't touch that until after this season. That's just my opinion. I want to see him play in 2019, but we'll see how that all turns out. All right, that'll do it for us tonight. Thank you to our producer. That is Matthew LeVay. Great stuff right here on this Wednesday night by our producer, Matt LeVay. All right, there you go. Stenny Thompson, James Coleman, they are coming up right now. It is the Sports Den. My name's Rick Ballew. Much more to do tomorrow night. Be back from 7 to 9 on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.